Chapter 22. The Importance of Being Tutored. Genkai looked surprisingly subdued when Harry's class convened in the DADA room on Monday. "It has been brought to my attention that my methods are too authoritarian for you. Therefore, I am recommending, rather than requiring, out-of-class tutoring." She paused, eyes traveling over the two houses. "Most of you will be approached this week, if you have not been already. Should you opt not to take advantage of this offer, I recommend," she bit out the word, "that you arrange to practice core magic with someone you trust. Do not practice until you are tired or sore. Defense is about protecting your life, not draining it." A pause. "Any questions?" Hermione's hand shot up. "Granger, can we approach someone to tutor us?" "No," Genkai said curtly. "If we have someone with skills in your field, you will receive an offer. Otherwise, your tutor's only use would be to watch that you don't overexert yourself. They don't have time to do the outside research required to help any outside their expertise."
"That's not fair," Ron blurted.
Genkai scowled. "You will raise your hand and wait to be called on, Mr. Weasley, if you wish to comment. Am I understood?" Ron muttered something that could have been agreement. "Good. As I was about to add, this tutoring arrangement is meant to maximize the amount of time and attention available to every student. Those of you who don't receive an offer to learn in your specific field will have the option to work with me. Any other questions?" Silence. "Very well. Today we will be discussing your performance in last week's hexing exercise." She flicked her wand, and a photograph leapt from her desk to hover in the air. Another flick stretched the paper, making the image large enough to see clearly. It was an aerial view of the arena room, taken just before last week's drill. "Observe," Genkai said, using her wand to point at the teams in their planning phase. "Your key mistake. See how the teams are all divided down house lines." Quills went to paper, and the defense class settled in to dissect their tactics. Kurama lay on his stomach, on his bed, textbook open, wand jammed into his ponytail, parchment lying before him. His attention was not on his homework, though, but rather on a large leaf dangling from a vine. That vine, woven in with the devil's snare around his headboard, ran down the bedpost, along the bottom of the wall, and out through the window. From there, it snaked down the cliff, through the cliff, and into the dungeons, and then spread out through the entirety of Hogwarts. The broad leaf in Kurama's hand was one of the monitors for his spy eye. His thumb toggled a joystick-like nub at the base of the leaf, as Kurama shuttled through views of the interior of the castle. The image flickered and settled on a view of a small, round room under Gryffindor Tower. Hiei sat on the carpeted floor of that room, facing two girls, the Patil twins. All three seemed to be meditating. A faint smile ghosted over Kurama's face. Meditation looked good on Hiei. It smoothed the lines on his face, masking his dark, defensive attitude without dulling his focus. The result was an illusion of vulnerability that was very, very appealing. Kurama tapped the joystick, cutting away from Hiei to continue through the video streams. Images flashed by, students studying, playing cards, roughhousing, teachers in hallways, grading papers, arguing, a pillow fight in the first-year Ravenclaw girls' dorm, a more serious fight in the third-year one, where they were now drawing lines to divide the room. Two unmistakable heads of red hair lurking in a passage behind the sixth-year dorm. How had the Weasley twins managed to get into the girls' part of Ravenclaw? The views flickered back down through the boys' half of Ravenclaw. Suspicious-looking potions making for the seventh years, poker for the fourth years, flying toys for the firsts, and back into the main part of the building. He circled around the sixth floor of the Ravenclaw wing, then the fifth,
and found himself looking into a large, beautifully appointed bathroom. A painted mermaid flicked her fins, lazing on a rock in her frame. Under the portrait, a white marble tub overflowed with bubbles, steam, and Malfoy. The blonde had his hands cupped on the wide ledge surrounding the bath, and was staring dazedly at a misshapen crystal he held. As the view zoomed in, the crystal pulsed and grew, becoming more symmetrical. Malfoy's eyes glazed over a bit more. Now that was singularly stupid, Kurama thought. Genkai's notes had said Malfoy made crystals. He was practicing core magic. It was all too easy to wear oneself out. All the Tante had done so at some point or another. And that was when they knew what they were doing. And the water was more than deep enough to drown in. What to do? Send a prefect out to check on Malfoy? Go himself? Compromise his spy eye and use it to keep the blonde from drowning if he went under? All the options had drawbacks. Fortunately, he wasn't going to have to put any into motion. Malfoy set aside his crystal and grabbed the soap. Kurama left his doormate to his bathing and continued on. Another circle around the castle, another level down, he found the library. It wasn't packed, but it had a fair number of students in it, including some of the ones Kurama found more intriguing. Akio, Yusuke, Keiko repeated. Akuchio, Yusuke said. His translation earring lay on the table between them, and had for the last hour, which was how long they'd been trying to train Yusuke to say the word correctly. Ie, Keiko said. Ak, she accented the K sound, managing to remove almost the entire vowel from the syllable. Aku. Yusuke, you can't keep relying on your earring to get the sounds right. Please try. Nani? Gomen nasai. Ak. Aku. Further down the table, Hermione read from a thick, dusty book. For it is not proven that all of their ilk have most brutally slain their masters and summoners to a man, and then gone on to cut swath through the ranks of mankind, that they may be found at the end of the trail of blood? Foolish is he who would learn the arts of the lower realms. Hermione, if you gotta read these debates out loud, couldn't you pick something in plain English? Ron asked. This is about as plain as it gets, Hermione said. I'm using a charm to translate from a form of Arabic. Oh, Ron paused. Can you translate to real English? Hermione sighed in mock exasperation. Of course I can. It says that no one's ever survived summoning a demon. Every one has broken free of whatever control the wizard had over it, killed him, and gone on a killing spree. Ron's eyes went wide. Wicked. Not really, Keiko spoke up. Most demons are, but I've encountered a couple that aren't wicked at all. The trio gaped at her, and she went faintly red. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Nani? Yusuke asked. Yukimura, Hermione said slowly. Are you saying it's okay to summon demons? Of course not, Keiko protested. Wouldn't you be upset if you got yanked into some weird world and someone tried to force you to do things? An angry demon isn't something you want to see. She paused and seemed to deflate a bit. Most demons are killers, so your chances of survival are slim to none. I was just saying that they aren't all wicked. Nani! Ron shifted uncomfortably. I didn't mean wicked literally. Yusuke snatched up his earring and snapped it back on. What are you guys talking about? Demons! Keiko and Hermione said in unison. Demons? Yusuke squawked. Have you ever met any? Hermione asked. Yusuke nearly fell out of his chair. Well, that is, he has, Keiko said. The barrier's a lot weaker in Japan for some reason. The lower-level demons keep sneaking through and making trouble. Yusuke made an odd sort of strangled sound. Genkai takes her more advanced students with her to go catch them sometimes. Really? Hermione asked. Did you ever go? Oh no, I'm her newest student, Keiko said. But she let me do research. Hermione's eyes lit up. On some of the demons they went up against. The more human ones have some absolutely fascinating rituals. Harry glanced at Ron, who flicked his eyes toward the girls, and then rolled his eyes at the ceiling. They are going to be chattering about this forever now, the expression said. Catching Yusuke's eye, Harry cocked his head at the door. We're gonna run for it. Wanna come? Yusuke quirked a smile. Hell yes! Slowly, silently, they pushed their chairs back, stood, not too quickly, and as casually as they could manage so as not to draw the girls' attention, and successfully snuck out. Tuesday morning, the sixth-year Ravenclaw girls came to breakfast with bright blue hair. By the time the food was served, the Weasley twins had endured three feminine tirades and one work order issued by a laughing Ravenclaw who rather liked her new look. They loudly proclaimed their innocence, but no one really believed them. Thursday afternoon, Kurama left lunch, trailing the Gryffindors. As they dispersed for their free afternoon, Kurama slid up behind Neville Longbottom. He tapped the boy on the shoulder. Excuse me, he said, as Neville turned startled eyes on him. I was wondering if I could talk to you for a moment. Neville, oddly enough, paled slightly. Me? Kurama nodded. Okay, but it'll have to be where someone can see us. Kurama was really starting to dislike his Slytherin badge. Anywhere you'd like. Neville glanced around and saw Seamus hovering near the end of the hall, eyes pinned to Kurama. He visibly relaxed, though only slightly, and turned back. In there, then. He pointed at an empty classroom. Not glancing at Seamus, the Gryffindor was hostile enough already, despite, or perhaps because of, their teamwork in the hexing drill. Kurama walked into the room, and allowed Neville to pick a seat before taking one to face him. He ignored Seamus as the boy inconspicuously appeared to hover in the doorway. Please forgive my rudeness, Kurama began, but I assume you would worry about poison if I offered you refreshment. Neville winced, but nodded weakly. So I will, cut to the chase. I wish to offer you tutoring. Already? Neville stuttered. That was a good sign. The boy seemed completely ignorant in their shared classes, but here was evidence that it wasn't due to gross stupidity. Kurama had wondered. If Neville hadn't realized that Kurama would be the most likely tutor for plant magic, then he would have been impossible to teach. But he wasn't, and it was a relief that Kurama would only have to deal with fear, not idiocy. Neville continued. Kurama waited, smiling faintly and trying to seem as unmenacing as possible. I can't do that thing. With the rose? Anything like that. Kurama blinked. Of course not. That's no technique to start off with. Neville seemed to shrink in on himself. He cast about for the right words. I don't want to. Just with the pillar or anything. Oh, just attack and destroy like that? Kurama asked gently. Neville stiffened. You don't have to. I don't? Kurama shook his head. No, fighting. It's only something I do when necessary. It's not my profession, and it doesn't have to be yours. He paused, letting that sink in. I thought that. After you mastered the actual growth and control, we would focus on medicines and remedies. Neville managed to deflate a bit more. I'm terrible in potions. Not potions, remedies. Kurama paused, then looked up and caught Seamus's eye. He raised one hand to his hair, carefully watching that Seamus wasn't going to react badly, and pulled a seed loose. It sprouted, threw out leaves and filled his hand with a purple blossom. Kurama displayed the flower to Neville. "This is a powerful antitoxin," he murmured, catching the boy's gaze with his own and holding it. "And it's not the only one. There are thousands of others spread out across the three worlds, and you have the ability to make them all. No brewing required. It's all right here." Kurama reached out, almost, but not quite, tapping the front of Neville's robes over his heart. Neville's eyes flew wide, and Kurama drew back. "When would you like to begin?" he asked more conversationally. The Gryffindor gulped. "I have this afternoon free?" "Excellent," Kurama said, smiling. He stood, bowing slightly and gesturing toward the door. "Would you like to go outside? We should start with mosses, and there's a lot on the castle walls near the lake." They passed Seamus and headed down the hall, the Gryffindor indiscreetly shadowing them. But Kurama didn't mind. He would get bored and leave eventually. At the latest, when it was obvious that plenty of people would be able to see Neville and Kurama. Hopefully. Harry glanced at the handful of other students from the corner of his eye. They were both boys and girls, one or two from every house and every year above fifth. They ranged from heavy-set, a Slytherin, to wispy, a Hufflepuff, to short with glasses, a Ravenclaw. None of them looked so much like weapon specialists. But then, he didn't really think he did either. And yet, here he was. The room wasn't the DADA arena. Genkai had lower year classes on Friday mornings. But it was very similar, though square rather than round. It had racks holding a variety of wooden weapons, a strange reed matting on the floor, and mirrors along one wall. Hiei stood at the center of the mat, shoeless, his arms crossed and the mirrors behind him. He gazed flatly over the gathering of students. "You are here to learn the art of using your weapon," he announced. "If you have a problem with my methods at any time, there's the door." His eyes flicked to the exit pointedly. "I am not teaching you to manifest your weapons. That's Kuwabara's job. But, should he not warn you of this, there will be no playing or showing off with your core magic. The idiot did that when we met, kept his sword out for all of 5 minutes, and then collapsed. And this was after several weeks of training. You won't repeat his mistake. Don't manifest your weapon except under his direction. Don't play with the weapons in this room, whether they are practice weapons or not. These are not toys. This isn't a game, and I have no trouble with putting you in the hospital wing myself if you're stupid enough to behave that way." He jerked his head back towards the mirrors. "I will see you if you do that in here, and I'll hear about it if you do it outside. It should be obvious that I won't tolerate fights or attacks. Leave your problems outside." And with that, the longest speech Harry had ever heard Hiei say, the boy stepped back to the far edge of the mat. "Take your shoes off, spread out over the mat, and we'll begin warm-up exercises. Don't stretch further than it hurts." Warm-up exercises? Ugh, Harry hadn't done that since Muggle gym class. But he towed his shoes off, found a spot, and followed Hiei through the familiar Muggle stretches. It was amazing how limber Hiei was. Harry was sure he'd only seen television gymnasts stretch that far. His elementary school classmates had never managed to, for example, spread their legs completely apart and lay forward on their stomachs. But Hiei looked as if he could fall asleep like that. Eventually, Hiei let the class stand once more. He left the mat, gathering practice weapons from the racks and passing them out. Each student got something different. No doubt the closest equivalent to whatever weapon they created, and Harry found himself with an oddly shaped sword. It seemed to be a hollow bundle of reeds or slats, and clacked faintly when Harry shook it. "A basic bokken," Hiei murmured as he handed it to Harry, "since we don't have anything precise for you. Hold it like so." And he moved Harry's fingers to the right grip. Hiei finished passing out weapons, took a bokken for himself, and returned to the front of the room. He pointed at the ground. Plant your feet. You want a good base, to make it harder to be pushed over. Legs shoulder-width apart. 1 foot behind you, angled sideways. He demonstrated, putting his left foot back. You can be pushed over like this. He tilted backwards, putting his weight on his left foot, then returned to the original pose. Or run at your opponent. Or pivot away. Get used to standing like this. Everybody shuffled to mimic the stance. You've got your grip and your stance. Weapons up. First block. He brought his bookend up, seeming to almost snap it into a precise angle before his body. Ha! Harry copied him, trying to put the last second snap into the block. Let me hear you put some force into it, Hiei ordered. Remember, this is a block. There will be another weapon hitting yours when it comes time to use it. Oppose that force. Harry brought his bookend up again, this time picturing something hurtling down at it. Sudden flash of memory, the basilisk crashing down on him, Godric's sword the only thing between him and poison fangs. Ha! He yelled, snapping the bookend up against the crushing serpent, hearing echoes from the other students. Again. Ha! Again. Ha! 40 minutes and one additional pose, first strike, later, Hiei allowed them to stop. Harry let his sword and his arms fall to his side, with a sense of relief. His years of wand work and snitch catching, fortunately, meant his arms weren't hurting too badly. Yet. But he was sure he would be thinking in the rhythm of that chorused shout for the next few hours, and if he didn't hear it in his dreams tonight, he no doubt would be after a few weeks of this. As Harry put his bookend away, crowding to the racks with the rest of the class, Hiei stepped up next to him. Potter, come with me. Everyone else, stay here with Kuwabara. Hey, no fair, someone protested. We've been here all morning. It's almost lunchtime. We are hungry too, another person added. Unseen by anyone but Harry, Hiei rolled his eyes. Kuwabara's session won't last more than 5 minutes. None of you are that strong yet. He brushed past Harry and out the door. Harry glanced at the class, a bit unhappy. Why was he always singled out? Then shrugged and followed Hiei. In the corridor, he ran a couple of steps to catch up with the other boy. Hey, he said. Why? Hiei's eyes flicked towards him, but he didn't pretend to not know what Harry meant. There's no reason for you to stay, unless you want to cause another explosion. Like when Genkai had tested him. Oh. Harry cast about for another subject. I don't think I've ever heard you talk so long. A shrug. I'm teaching. It's not enough to say do this without saying why. A smirk. That's Snape's approach. Harry grinned. It sucks. Hiei nodded. It was silent and, like Moody, carried undertones of vigilance, but it wasn't hostile. Harry could deal with honest, non-hostile silence. They continued on to lunch. The following week was considerably calmer than any of the Tante could have expected, considering that the 5th years and above had all had their initial practice session in core magic. Perhaps the varied, pointed lectures on the dangers of wasting their reserves had worked. Not even the Slytherins tried anything. Go on, Draco said, waving off his lackeys and teammates, the gesture elegant despite his Quidditch gloves. I'm going to fly a bit longer. He watched the team gather up their gear and the balls. They knew better than to expect him to stoop to something as menial as helping. Then leave. Once they were out of sight, and he was sure none of them had bothered to double back to spy on him, Draco tore off his Quidditch gloves and hurried over to the stands. He picked a spot well sheltered from the wind and the sight of the castle, dropped his things, and plopped, nope, sat hastily and a bit over-eagerly, how had that word gotten into his vocabulary, onto the grass. It wasn't dark enough to actually see the power running through his body, but Draco could sense it, and he'd managed to get in enough practice that he didn't need the cold to visualize his power pushing free of his body and freezing solid. Lumpy little crystals filled his hands, clinking and sparkling in the late afternoon sun as he practiced. He didn't need the cold. He didn't need anything. Those arrogant fools thought he needed a tutor. This was proof enough that he didn't. Soon he'd be making better crystals. Sharp blades, expensive jewels, spell components, anything that pleased him. Let them teach the other students all they liked. Their muggle-favoring propaganda. Their little rules to hold the best people down and let the stupid masses walk all over them. Draco saw right through their plot. And he wasn't having any of it. Safety, he groused aloud, unawares. The crystals rained from his hands, glittering brilliantly, dizzily. Any idiot can tell when they're going too far. The sparkles were getting brighter, multiplying. Was he getting better quality gems? Any idiot. The stones fell, scattering over the spinning ground as the sun went out.